Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Let's Talk Learning Spaces. We're back for another season or another academic year, if you want to say that, for individuals listening out there. My name is Forrest Foster, and I also have one of my esteemed colleagues with me, Carl Leek, today. He's going to be the actual host for today, and our actual guest for today is Dr. Carla Hayden. Many of you all in the library community probably know that name very well. She is currently the CEO of PREP. Free Library in Baltimore, Maryland, and she was the fourth black president of the ALA, or excuse me, American Library Association, from 2003 to 2004. During her presidency, she was the leading voice of the ALA in speaking out against newly passed United States Patriot Act. And isn't that fitting that we just talked about that? And I hate to jump in right now, but since we just came across it and I was just thinking about that, since the Patriot or the Privacy and the Patriot Act laws have expired, Dr. Hayden, can you just briefly touch on what your thoughts are about that?
Thank you for having me, too, because that experience of being president of the American Library Association when the Patriot Act was really being examined by the library community and other people concerned about rights when you were protecting the nation made my presidency quite interesting, as you could imagine, because the library community was at the forefront and people weren't as aware of what was contained in the Patriot Act at that time. And so Now to have it revisited, to have debates still going on about it, I think shows that the library community has a responsibility to look out for instances where interest is confused or could be confused with intent.
Right. So that was something new.
Well, there are provisions that, from what I understand, are still in effect, and the major part of notifying a person or letting, or at least having a warrant or something to justify the search and not having global searches, I think has put the issue back in the forefront where we really need it again. So I think it's going to continue.
So, and I know a lot of people are inquiring about the government and you know, their not necessarily intruding, but do they have the right, though? Is that a right by the government, though?
It's a right, but it also is something that you have to show cause for.
Right. Okay.
And that was the crux of the matter before, and it still is. So just doing global searches without justification, just to see if anything pops up, that's a questionable action. And I think we should all keep questioning, you know, how much personal information is available and for what purposes.
Okay. Sorry about that. Had to bring that in since it was the segue there.
It's very relevant.
It's true.
It should make all people who've been involved with the library community for so long feel very good that they have helped the public become aware of something.
Okay. Callers, if you want to call in, you are more than welcome. The phone number is 347-945-5190. That's 347-945-5190. And there was a caller a few minutes ago. I'm sorry I could not bring you in. I kind of wanted to get the show going a little bit, but if you wanted to call back, that would be awesome. Again, that's 347-945-5190. And you can call back at any time. I'm going to let my colleague Carl Lee take over since your name was on the list in regards to the topic of today, Library Spaces Matter, and we felt it would be compelling and perfect to have you on the show in regards to what your library did and what were you guys or you all were able to do during that time of Freddie Gray demonstrations and situation down there or up there in Baltimore. So I'm gonna let Carl take over, and we're gonna go from there.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Foster, for the opportunity to co-host today. So we're going to change gears just a bit and talk about the purpose for this show. And our motto or theme for the show is Library Spaces Matter. As Mr. Foster mentioned, if we think about Ferguson or New York and the Freddie Gray incident, I think now with these incidents occurring, the library now is in the forefront. So with that, we are taking the phrase Library Spaces Matter to talk to Dr. Hayden about that. So we're gonna dive right in, and we're going to just ask the first question about that and let Dr. Hayden elaborate on those issues. But just for a little background information, Dr. Hayden, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about your journey into librarianship?
Well, I think when we just talked about the Patriot Act and being the president of American Library Association and how I really didn't know that that was going to happen, being part of the library field was also somewhat accidental. And it started when I graduated from Roosevelt University thinking I might go into law or something, and I realized that I needed to be more specific about my career path. And so a colleague of mine, I used to go to the library between job interviews just while I was figuring out what to do, and a colleague that had just graduated with me said, "Hey, are you here for the library jobs? They're hiring anybody with a bachelor's degree." And so I went upstairs, and the rest is history in one way, because I got the job and he didn't. But I also then found out about what librarianship could be, and they placed me on the south side of Chicago. I was in Chicago at the time, in a community that had so many different needs. And that's when I realized that librarianship could be an empowerment tool for a community, and being a librarian could be that vehicle to help people. And
yeah,
so it turned from law
that.
To librarianship.
Wow. Well, I think,
and
I
it's
think
been an interesting journey.
I believe that. And I just think, you know, sometimes with this field and probably other fields too, people don't know about how diverse the field is and how many experiences people come with into this field. So I always like to hear people's stories for
right.
encouragement and for advice, so people can know that there are many, many paths to enter librarianship, and I really appreciate that. In terms of our first question, we want to talk about the experience that your library had during the demonstrations involving the Freddie Gray incident. And the first question that we have was, how are you all available, and to what extent did the library make themselves available to the community of Baltimore during the Freddie Gray situation?
It started with the branch librarian right there at the epicenter of the unrest, and Melanie Diggs, who has her pulse on the community, and I think that's what's so important in terms of being in neighborhoods and communities as a librarian, to look out and reach out to know the people and to know the situation. She made the decision to shelter in place when she saw that the unrest was actually at the door of the library on that Monday, and this is a Monday. And we think back on that, it was a day similar, not as hot, but day similar, beautiful day, when things were really unclear. And she called downtown, that's where the Central Library is, and said, I'd like to stay here and be that safe place for the children and the people who are already in the library. And we just said, close, lock the doors, and just see what happens. And then she, as things really got more uncertain, she made sure that people in the library and staff got out safely through the back entrance. And then that night, she called me and said, I really think we need to be there the next day and open the library because we are the only place for internet access. We are the only safe place. And even to basic needs like going to the bathroom in that community. And so the next morning, staff members from the Central Library, from other branches, we all went down to the library with water and all types of other things and opened up the library. And sure enough, there were people standing there to get on computers specifically for applying for jobs.
Wow. And I think a good follow-up to that is, you know, with that occurring and the library being a safe haven, that kind of explains you know, exactly what kind of services were available, but were there any other services or resources that you all may not have expected that spiked during that time? Or?
I mentioned the water and other things like fruit or just basic food, and that's what happened, that we weren't as prepared to think about, wow, there are no food sources in this area now. There weren't places for diapers or some of the basic necessities. And so the Whole Foods company stepped in and started providing food and those basic necessities, and we became a distribution center for those supplies. We also became a place for the media to file their stories and to cover what was happening as well. So the story room, appropriately called, became that place where media could come in and use the restroom and do basic things, but also to interview people from the area and the community as well. And it was a place not on the street that they could come into and have some respite, really, from what was going on outside and find out what people in the community really were thinking. And then, of course, the place where children and young adults came because school was out. And that was similar to the Ferguson experience. In fact, the Ferguson library director called us and gave his support, Scott Bonner.
Wow. And can you say more about, you mentioned a partnership with Whole Foods and the other entities like the media. Can you say more about how those partnerships formed? Were they spontaneous, or did you have to, you know, actually reach out to them?
They were mainly spontaneous, and there was some reaching out in terms of the media or just the community in general. We actually put up very large signs saying, come in, we're open, because it wasn't as apparent with the law enforcement presence in front of the library or things, you know, so we wanted to make sure. So we encouraged people to come in, and the media as well, and making our Wi-Fi and electric outlets available for recharging their machines. Whole Foods reached out to us, and we were very grateful for that. And then as the weeks went on, the Small Business Association reached out and wanted to be able to provide assistance for the small businesses that had difficulties and a place for that, as well as a program from the Legal Aid Society. And this is starting and continuing now, Lawyers in the Library, to just talk about and help people with basic legal issues.
So do you think, in terms of disaster management and libraries, I know that, you know, that's not a part of your normal library school curriculum. And when you think about disaster management, you think about acts of nature. So do you think that the topic of when there may be civil unrest, that that libraries need to be prepared and follow some of these things as protocol and policy, and instead of, you know, as a reaction to something like that.
Right, and you hit the nail on the head with what we usually prepare for in library schools. I have a running list of things they never teach you in library school, and we use that for our training program here at Pratt as well. When most library schools talk about or consider disaster preparedness, they are preparing and saving materials and equipment, not as much the people. And that's an important distinction. And being able to have enough supplies like water or things that are ready. Also having staff trained to be able to be in the communities and be trusted and be a conduit for being able to know what the community needs are and think about what would happen if this happened. Would you open? Who would come? What would you need? And who would you reach out to? So it's helped us tremendously
right.
here in Baltimore.
Right. And if we can shift gears a bit to talk about, now we know that this is still fresh and there hasn't been a lot of time for reflection, but since that time, can you share anything about the change in the atmosphere, or if you sense any tangible changes since, or I guess during the aftermath of what's going on?
I was just there the other day, and what I sensed, there was a mural that was put up on the side of the library in the back. I sensed even more of a use of the library as a focal point in the community, a focal point of something positive, a place that symbolized what could happen in the community. And that was very helpful because sometimes the physical manifestation of change in a area that's had significant unrest is not as apparent immediately.
Right.
And so the library is just this symbol. We've received many, many donations and of equipment, of actual funding, and we've been making improvements in the branch in that time, and people have appreciated and really see what's happening there. So while things in the general area might not be as apparent in terms of progress or change, the library has become this real center now, even more than it was.
Wow. And I'm going to ask this last question. I'm going to take a break and ask and yield to Mr. Foster to see if there are any callers that we have. But one question I do have is, are there any new operations or implementations that you are planning or see forthcoming, I guess, for the whole library system? Not necessarily as a result of the Freddie Gray incident, but it could be, but just in the near future, of any services or operations or policies that you see putting in place.
The thing that's going to be most evident is the expansion of the social services in all of the branches. So the lawyers in the library are starting at the Pennsylvania Avenue branch, but we're planning to have those services in other branches, as well as food programs. And we have a program that's going to start with another grocery store where they're going to deliver a virtual supermarket situation. We also are expanding our summer meals for coordination with our summer reading program. So this experience of being able to make sure that we are a social service outlet is going to expand even more. And so people will see quite a few programs. And organizations have been coming to us saying, can we, for instance, make sure that we have the tax preparation in all of the branches.
And I'd like to commend your library for that and your service for that, because we always think about the library space and partnerships. And I think that's a very organic partnership And it's just a direct reflection on the community in terms of the impact that it will have. So I just want to take a minute just to commend you for that and for that vision to provide services like that.
Well, it's the staff that really says it and brings it home to us too.
Wow.
Again, the phone number here is 347-945-5190. That's 347-945-5190. And hopefully, caller, if you would like to call back, that would be awesome. Whatever you have on your mind, or either shoot us an email. We'd definitely love to take your call, though. Something you mentioned a few seconds ago, virtual supermarkets. Can you expound on that a little bit,
That's an exciting program that started because Baltimore is a city and there are other cities and areas that have what are called food deserts. There aren't many places to get nutritious food or anything beyond like a corner store in an area. There are no grocery stores, as you know, or chains or anything like that. And so the city health department partnered with the library to start a virtual supermarket where the patrons of the library can order from a supermarket at the library, and their health department people there to help them hopefully make some nutritious choices. And they have baskets of apples, and the library puts a lot of the materials about nutrition and things. But also, if you want to get Frito-Lays, you can. You know, there's no restriction on what you order. Right. Plus, you get the sale prices, and that's very important, especially for seniors. That was the first question they wanted to know if I do this, because seniors were coming in the library for computer classes and things like that. So you order your food and your supplies, and then the next day there's a delivery truck that comes and you pick them up at the library. And you try to coordinate it with other things going in. I mentioned the computer classes or an author program or something like that. And it's very, very convenient for the public and also for the staff.
Right, right. And I was just thinking about that in regards to, I guess I would say, morale, or how has that changed staff morale, or not only staff morale, but in regards to your particular need, has like a different mindset or a different way of, creating jobs. Has that changed any, or has that changed
your
outlook on that? Right.
I think it's expanded, and that's why I'm excited about jumping in on that. What it has done is helped, I think, the existing staff and in terms of recruiting new staff to realize that in this time that people are saying, oh, why do you need a library as place? Why do you need a building? Why do you need a library with all the big search things and people can look at everything on their device? What's
right.
the purpose of a library? It gives them that renewal of, here's what our real mission is. It's to help people in their lives with resources.
Right.
Real
right.
simple. And the resources can be human, they can be virtual, they can be anything. But that's what a library really signifies. And so when we recruit people, there are certain types of people who want to help other people in this way, and it gives the existing staff a real renewed sense of this is
right.
why we're really here.
Right.
And like I say, you know,
not just
really,
the best sellers.
Right. What I like about that is are the partnerships, because, you know, we've even had instances where people will ask, if you're going to provide service A, well, isn't that the job of some other department on campus? And just to, you know, connect that with what you all are doing, I like the partnerships because you're not, you know, forging on anyone else's territory, but you're actually partnering
no.
with those other people. In,
right.
And, you know,
coming you're providing the space for it.
Right.
And the resources that could complement whatever it is that they're offering. You don't have to. And I think sometimes we get confused we don't have to provide legal advice like a lawyer, but we can provide the space for that to happen.
Okay. Carl, I know you had a couple more questions. I have about 5 minutes left, 5 minutes left already. So if we can go ahead into that, and then we'll take some final thoughts.
All right. Yeah. So the final questions relate more to portrayals of cities, like Baltimore, and we were discussing a lot of people's exposure to Baltimore or Chicago might be shows like The Wire or in Chicago the new documentary series Chicagoland. One thing that we noticed is that the library in these particular spaces didn't have a space, hence this, the theme for our show's Library Spaces Matter. So can you reflect on that and how even the partnerships that you've already mentioned are putting the library on the map, so to speak?
I think that it's interesting that when libraries are portrayed in media, sometimes it's more in a commercial sense, and we do a lot of monitoring of that. When you have a commercial and they're trying to show that something is really cool and hip, they show a stereotypical librarian, and then they take a bite at a gum, and the librarian turns into this, jumping on the table thing. So the public perception of a library is either a place that people who are introverted go, and or it's a scary place where things happen, And so when you have cities being portrayed in certain ways, I know that there's a limited amount of time that they have to portray what they're trying to do, but it would be helpful, I think, now. And I think there's going to be a little shift in that the library would be a place, especially in this city, in Baltimore, that would be viewed as more of that community center or a gathering place where people are talking about whatever the issue is. They might be in the library meeting room. And that would be a wonderful thing.
All right. So the final question that we have is, do you want to take just a minute or two just to talk about, are there any, since the time that you've been, speaking to people for interviews, is there anything that you want to share that hasn't been conveyed so far that you want to let people know using this venue of our show that you feel like hasn't been covered?
I know that quite a few of the people who are listening in or participating are in the library field and might feel that they're not really reaching the general public. And I think I would just encourage everyone to be involved in so many other things besides the field and let people say, wow, you're a librarian?
Right.
And to help change that perception of what a librarian is and what a librarian can do. And that's being part of the world and also bringing your sensibilities to whatever's going on in the world. Mm-hmm. I think that would help quite a bit.
I have a quick question. I think we have about a minute left. Can you talk about, I know you mentioned earlier, I'm glad Carl was able to host some of these questions because it gives me time to sit back and ask and hear the interview sometimes. Sometimes I'm so intense on listening to it, you get a chance to write anything down. But you talked about Melanie Diggs. Can you talk about her a little bit?
Melanie Diggs, the branch librarian
Pennsylvania
Avenue branch, who I think exemplifies the best that you can have in a librarian who wants to really serve people. She admitted that she was, it took courage to go back and be there, but she knew she had to do it. And she said that it put everything together that she had ever thought about being a librarian in one place and gave her a new sense of commitment. And so I think she received a lot of recognition, but I think she could receive even more and needs to be held up as someone who is the best in our field.
Awesome.
And you also mentioned your library staff. Can you just take just a few seconds to talk about the contribution of the entire library staff?
Well, I mentioned that on that Tuesday morning, right after the unrest, when it was on international television.
We have about 20 seconds
really,
left, y'all. I'm sorry.
Okay.
We had staff members from all over the library system that volunteered, put on their jeans, and went down there
right.
to
right.
the site to be there in solidarity.
Right. teamwork.
Well,
that's the best too.
Yeah, like somebody just said, teamwork, collaboration. I think all you, Carl, Dr. Hayden, and the people from Baltimore and the Baltimore Library staff that you've done for this community and for the library community and community of Baltimore, we thank you for coming on to the show. We hope to work with you and talk with you in the future, the near future. And we just want to say thank you for taking your time.
Thank you. Get Mulaney, too.
Okay. Thank you. Will do. Will do. Y'all have a good one.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.